From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, a concert and interview with songwriter, guitarist, and singer Dave Alvin, formerly of The Blasters and X. He has a new solo album featuring old and new originals, as well as This Blues by Memphis Slim. A concert with Dave Alvin coming up on Fresh Air.
Horses, you may own the whole race track. You may have all the money to buy anything you lack, but I don't care how big you are, and I don't care what you're.
First, the news.
From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Barbara Campbell. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan says the outlook for the American economy is as bright as it's been in decades. Even before Greenspan began his testimony before the House Budget Committee today, dealing was brisk on Wall Street as traders drove the Dow Jones Industrial Average up. The Dow had dropped substantially in the previous three sessions. Greenspan told the House panel that economic activity has strengthened, unemployment is down, and prices have been fairly stable. Knowing that traders are concerned about the weak dollar overseas and wondering if it will lead to higher interest rates, Greenspan gave an assurance that he's watching the situation.
I do not intend to discuss these developments in my testimony this morning. However, I thought it would be appropriate to inform the committee that Secretary Benson and I have been following developments very closely, because we cannot be indifferent to major movements in our currency.
Treasury Secretary Lloyd Benson said later that he's concerned about the dollar's slide and is prepared to support it if necessary. The Rwandan rebels are making a big push on the government-held part of the capital, Kigali, hoping to take the city before the expected intervention of French peacekeeping troops tomorrow. Rebel officials oppose French intervention, saying the French support the Rwandan government, and the rebels say they'll treat the French troops as the enemy. The UN Security Council has approved France's offer to move into Rwanda. France is making the offer because it's a former colonial power in Africa and maintains economic and military interests there. Russian President Boris Yeltsin has agreed to travel to the United States in September for a summit meeting with President Clinton. NPR's Michael Goldfarb reports from London.
The summit is scheduled for September. The exact time and place will be made public at the G7 summit next month in Italy. Russian Foreign Minister Andrei Kozarev officially accepted President Clinton's invitation while attending a NATO meeting in Brussels. Kozarev was in Brussels to put Russia's signature to the historic Partnership for Peace Accord. This means that Russia, along with many of the former Warsaw Pact countries, will now share defense ties with NATO. Russia will take part in joint military exercises and will be allowed to send a delegation to NATO headquarters. The Partnership for Peace was first announced at a NATO summit in January. The signing followed months of intense negotiations, which have created the outline of a second agreement, which provides the framework for enhanced NATO dialogue with Russia. I'm Michael Goldfarb in London.
The Tokyo stock market closed 200 points lower today because traders are worried about the effect on the Japanese economy of the weak U.S. dollar. The U.S. market is ending on an up note. They're up 10 points in heavy trading of 243 million shares. This is NPR News. O.J. Simpson's defense has revealed that police have not found a bloody ski mask in connection with murder charges against Simpson. News reports had said the ski mask was found on Simpson's property by police investigating the deaths of Simpson's ex-wife and a friend of hers. Defense attorney Robert Shapiro told the court he wanted access to the mask, but the prosecutor responded that no ski mask is on the list of physical evidence because authorities have not found any ski mask. Other news reports have said police have found a pair of bloody gloves, but those items were not discussed in today's hearing. The North Korean government has accepted a proposal from the South for talks in preparation for a summit. South Korea's foreign minister says the North's nuclear program will be a key topic. The BBC's Simon Long reports.
South Korean Foreign Minister Han Sung-joo said that prospects for an inter-Korean summit were now better than ever, but he added that wasn't saying very much. He pointed out that the message received from North Korea agreeing to a working-level meeting next week represented the first time the North had accepted such a meeting without quibbling about the date or format. In the nearly 50 years of division on the Korean Peninsula, there's never been a presidential summit, and there's still no sense of certainty in South Korea that it will actually take place. Mr. Han said that if it does, the most important issue from the South's point of view would be North Korea's willingness to abide by international safeguards to prove that it's not diverted nuclear material to make bombs.
Simon Long in Seoul. UN military officials say Muslim-led government troops and Bosnian Serbs have been fighting again in northern Bosnia, despite the 12-day-old ceasefire agreement. One UN spokesman notes that violations are reported every day. He says the UN commander has invited all sides to a meeting about it on Saturday. Another officer says the Bosnian government forces are provoking a lot of the confrontations. I'm Barbara Campbell in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Whether or not you're already a Dave Alvin fan, I think you're going to enjoy the concert and interview we have today. Rock critic Robert Christgau called Alvin a born songwriter and guitarist. Alvin writes songs that tell stories. His songs and his guitar playing draw on the blues, rockabilly, and country music. In the 80s, he played with the popular band The Blasters. He wrote most of the group's songs. His older brother Phil sang them. Dave Alvin left the Blasters in 86, briefly became the guitarist for the band X, and then started a solo career. He's just released his fourth solo album called The King of California. The album features old and new songs by Alvin in a stripped-down acoustic setting. We invited him to bring his guitar, play some songs for us, and talk about his songwriting and guitar playing. Dave Alvin, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks for having me.
I want you to open with a song that you do on your new record called 4th of July. There's a history behind the song. Give us, like, the history of this song.
Well, it's based on a true story that took place in my hometown of Downey, California. But when I wrote it, I was kind of writing it as a goodbye song, you know, like the relationship's over, see you later. And when I recorded it with X and on my first solo album, that was kind of approached that way. But over, you know, over the, whatever, the 6 years or so, it kind of changed its meaning to me. Because sometimes when you write a song, you don't know really what you're writing. It just rhymes and it sounds good. And it takes you someplace that maybe you don't understand, but you know it works. So over the years, it kind of changed its meaning to becoming... It went through a period of ambiguity, and now it's kind of like, it's almost a let's stay together song now, so.
She's waiting for me when I get home from work. Oh, but things just ain't the same. She turns out the lights and she cries in the dark and won't answer when I call her name. And on the stairs I smoke a cigarette alone. Mexican kids are shooting fireworks below. And hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. And hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. It's the 4th of July. She gives me her cheek. But I want her lips, and I don't have the strength to go on the lost side of town in a dark apartment. We gave up trying so long ago. On the stairs I smoke a cigarette alone.
Mexican kids are shooting fireworks below. And hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. Hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. Whatever happened, I apologize. So dry your tears and, baby, walk outside. It's the 4th of July. On the stairs I smoke a cigarette alone. Mexican kids are shooting fireworks below. Hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. Hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. We forgot all about the 4th of July. Hey, baby.
Dave Elvin, that's a great song.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's very, very you to take what people consider to be a very celebratory holiday, exuberant holiday like the 4th of July, and write a really depressing, that's moody me. Song about it.
Yeah, I got that knack, I guess. Yeah.
Do you think your songwriting has changed a lot since you left the Blasters and started writing songs for yourself?
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, the roots are still the same, and that's time and place and the musicians you're playing with. And when you're writing for another singer in a band, you're writing, you have to sort of write about shared things, shared experiences, shared emotions, and you get to a point where you run out, you know, or you get to a point where you're just tired of compromising because maybe one person sees the world a different way. And I realized at a certain point that I couldn't advance as a songwriter unless, you know, it sounds egotistical, and maybe it is, but I had to sing them. And I don't, you know, if other people want to sing them, that's great, and I'm all for it, you know, but there would be, like, no reason for me to write songs after a while if I didn't perform them, you know. I mean, in a way, I would love to be in a band. I would love to have that experience still, but on the other hand, it wouldn't work anymore.
And yet, although I know some of the songs are very personal and come out of your own experiences, yeah, like 4th of July, I figure some of them probably don't. You'd be in pretty bad shape if all these songs were autobiographical. There's a lot of songs about fugitives and, you know, people who have committed petty, yeah, crimes and who are, you know, dirt poor all their lives. This can't be your typical daily experience.
Well, no, but you see things, you get an image, you'll just walk down the street and you see an image, or you think of people you've known. And my brother Phil and I grew up a little differently than a lot of other people. You know, on one hand, our father was a union organizer, so we spent a lot of our youth in the Southwest on organizing drives in copper towns and coal mining towns. And then later on in our life, when we were in our early teens, we followed around, you know, blues legends like, you know, T-Bone Walker and Big Joe Turner and Eddie Vincent. And all those things tend to rub off. And then, of course, when you're a teenager, well, I don't know about of course, but when we were teenagers, we had a tendency to look for characters, let's put it that way. something I, if you know, if I had kids, I probably wouldn't let them do. You know, I'd be like kind of get away from them. Yeah, they're no good. I've done that. But you know, a song like "Guilty Man," for example, is a song about a guy that I knew. Growing up, when I was like 17, he was about 21, and destined for prison, which is where he wound up. But he had the sort of attitude that the song has, was his attitude. And just one day, you know, write a song about it.
It's a great song. Can you do it for
sure.
us?
Sure. Behind the counter didn't speak good English, but he understood the point of a gun. It wasn't no big deal, he just had some money, and at the time I didn't have none. When I walked in his store half past midnight, I took what I could and I ran. So tonight the police are searching this city for one more guilty man. I think I'll go see this woman on my old side of town. I like to see her every now and again. And I'll say hi to her kids as she sends them to bed, 'cause her ex-husband's my best friend. And she won't ask no questions, she'll just smile when I lay some money in her hand. And for an hour or two she'll say she's in love with one more guilty man. You can blame my folks or the economy, blame my schooling, or you can blame me. I'm just what I am, one more guilty man. I could say I got some kids and they got nothing to eat, and I got tired of hearing them cry. I could say anything that you wanted to hear, but it just might be a lie. Yeah, well, I could get a job, but I got my pride. I ain't working in no hamburger stand. So take a good look through the bars on your window for one more guilty man. You can blame my folks or the economy, blame my schooling, or you can blame me. I'm just what I am, one more guilty man. One more guilty man. One more guilty man. One more guilty man.
It's a wonderful song. That's Dave Alvin performing in our studio, and that song, Guilty Man, was recorded on his album, Blue Boulevard. He's got a new recording called King of California. You were talking about how this song was based on somebody who you knew when you were younger. What was your attitude toward him and the things that he'd done?
Well, you know, I guess mixed, you know, because you're attracted to the excitement and all that, and it's fun in a way, but on the other hand, you're going, well, I know this is wrong, but, you know, when you're a teenager, it's almost, which is when I knew this guy, you know, it's, you kind of don't know what to think in a lot of ways. I mean, I had pretty strong, you know, political, et cetera, beliefs, but right and wrong moral questions are definitely ambiguous. And maybe they still are for me. You know?
My guest is Dave Alvin, and he has a new album called King of California, and he's here performing some of his songs. And Dave, why don't we take a short break?
Sure.
And then we'll talk some more and hear some more music. This is Fresh Air. My guest is songwriter, guitarist, singer Dave Alvin. He has a new album called King of California, and he's playing some old and new songs for us today on Fresh Air. I want to talk a little bit about your guitar playing and the different guitar styles that you have. You have a very blues-oriented guitar style. How did you learn the blues? Did you learn it from records? Did you learn it from following your blues heroes?
Yeah, records and watching everyone from, Reverend Gary Davis to Freddie King, you know, because we'd see, when we were little kids, we'd go and see those guys. But the actual sort of day in, day out, I would say I learned it from my brother Phil, who is a great sort of country blues guitar player. And I learned it from a guy named Gary Massey, who could play like T-Bone Walker and Jimmy Reed. So we'd go see T-Bone live, and then Gary could do it just down pat. And then I'd study their fingers, and I never really played guitar until we started the Blasters when I was in my early 20s. And we always had guitars in the house, and I played them, but I never played guitar, if you know what I mean. I never like said I was a guitar player or anything. And it'd be the kind of situation where guitar players would come over to the house and, you know, and they'd do something like a T-Bone, you know. Kind of thing. And then as soon as they'd leave, I'd like go pick up the guitar we had in our house and, you know, and that's kind of how I learned how to play guitar, you know. But yeah, I mean, there were certain guitar players like Johnny Guitar Watson and, you know, Chuck Berry, Guitar Slim, that, you know, or Elmore James. First time I heard him, that was it, you know. And I've got kind of a primitive style. And the one thing that's maybe good about it is, especially on electric guitar, when I'm playing electric guitar, you know it's me, you know. And because it's just kind of primitive, like I said. And those the guitar players I mentioned, like Johnny Guitar Watson, very physical, not sweet at all, just physical, you know. Kind of guitar playing, and it just stuck with me. So even like later on when, you know, like through the Blasters, but even when I was like in X or I would get called to do, you know, sessions for various people's records, you know, like especially in X, I was really, because a lot of their music was, you know, the, and certain people couldn't understand that how I could fit in, but when I had a chance, I was always throwing in, you know. So it's just the way I play.
Did you impersonate any of your heroes before finding your own blues style? Your own?
Yeah, I impersonated, not quite impersonated, Chuck Berry and Carl Perkins, people like that. But I think my first real guitar hero was Lightnin' Hopkins, because when we were sneaking in the bars and going to the folk clubs and to the blues clubs and all that, I saw him about, my brother and I must have seen him around 53, 54 times. The number changes, but it's about that. And I just loved him. I just thought, you know, he'd get up on stage and it'd be nighttime and he'd have his sunglasses on. He'd have his hair slicked back and he'd be wearing like a sharkskin suit. And just the way his hands moved on the guitar was beautiful to watch. Nobody I've ever seen can do with his hands. I'm not talking what he's playing. I'm just talking about the way his hands moved on the guitar. Just fluid. they were almost as, it was as much a part of the song as the playing, was just to see the way he would take his thumb and go, of course, his radio. But he's always been an influence. So on the new album, I did an old Whistlin' Alex Moore song, who was a Texas piano player, blues piano player, blues songwriter, and did one of his songs, but I did it in the Lightnin' Hopkins style.
Why don't you do it for us?
You got it. I met a woman in East Texas. She'd been left by herself alone. I met a woman in East Texas. She'd been left by herself alone. And I was stranded out in the country where I was barely known. Fell for me and lonesome strangers standing in the drizzling rain. She fell for me and lonesome strangers standing in the drizzling rain. She said, "You can stay with me, baby, though I don't even know your name. Don't tell me you love me, 'cause to tell a lie is a sin. Just don't tell me you love me, 'cause to tell a lie is a sin." But you can lay down beside me, 'cause tonight I need a friend. I care for you, Daddy, but I don't love no man more than myself. She said, "I care for you, baby, but I don't love no man more than myself." But I got a mind to care and a heart to love like anyone else. Will the wolves howl till midnight and the wild dogs moan for day? Will the wolves howl till midnight and the wild dogs moan for day? But he didn't have a thing to say.
Dave Elvin, can you stick around with us for the second part of our show?
Sure.
That would be great. My guest is singer-songwriter guitarist Dave Elvin. He's got a new CD called King of California. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Coming up, we continue our concert and interview with Dave Alvin. After leaving the Blasters and X, he went out on his own. He's just released his fourth solo album. We're listening to the track I Won't Be Leaving.
When it's cold and it's raining, the midnight cars roll down the street. Street light shines in the gutter, and you've gone off to sleep. Baby, I sit up smoking, wipe the ashes off the bed.
From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Barbara Campbell. The United Nations Security Council has approved the French plan to send its troops to intervene in the Rwandan civil war. The intervention was backed by a smaller-than-expected majority of the council. France has said it's ready to send a force in immediately. The BBC's John Line reports.
Although France has won the support of the Security Council, the narrowness of the margin will come as a major embarrassment, both for the French government and for the UN Secretary-General, who's given strong personal backing. Security Council resolutions require 9 votes in favour. This won 10, so France just avoided the humiliation of relying on the casting vote of the Rwandan government representative, who currently has a seat on the council. There is now a serious danger that this half-hearted endorsement could undermine both the French plan and the UN's own attempts to expand its force in Rwanda. Some African countries who've offered troops to the UN are already considering withdrawing those offers. And the RPF rebels have threatened the safety of both the French troops and the UN peacekeeping force.
John Line reporting from the UN. The prosecutors in the O.J. Simpson case say the widely reported bloody ski mask supposed to have been found on his property does not exist. At a hearing in Los Angeles today in which the defense was given access to the evidence against Simpson, the prosecutor was asked about the mask and she said police have not found such an item. The judge has denied the prosecutor's request to have Simpson's forensic team videotaped as they examine blood samples and other items. The prosecutor had said she was concerned about the samples being tainted. President Clinton commemorated the 50th anniversary of the GI Bill of Rights today. The legislation has enabled millions of war veterans to receive education and training, to buy homes, or to get unemployment benefits. NPR's Richard Gonzalez reports.
President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, better known as the GI Bill of Rights, in order to ease the economic transition of returning World War II veterans. Since then, more than 20 million veterans have trained under the original bill or succeeding versions. More than 14 million home loans have been guaranteed, and the U.S. Treasury has received up to 8 times as much in income taxes from veterans as it has paid out to them in benefits.
Just as D-Day was the greatest military action in our history, so the GI Bill arguably was the greatest investment in our people in American history.
President Clinton said the GI Bill provided the undergirding for what has been the most successful middle class in all of history. I'm Richard Gonzalez in Washington.
The dollar did a little better on currency markets today, although Treasury Secretary Lloyd Bentsen says he is concerned about the dollar's recent drop. He says he's watching and preparing for possible intervention. Wall Street ended a 3-day losing streak today. The Dow rose 17 points. Advances led declines by a 3-2 margin. This is NPR News. Israel Radio says PLO Chief Yasser Arafat is planning to visit newly independent Jericho. Residents of the city have been eagerly preparing for weeks and speculating on when he would arrive. Israeli Radio says Arafat has delayed his visit because he fears assassination attempts. He would be protected by the new Palestinian police force in Jericho, but Israel Radio says the Israeli government is also making plans. The report says Israeli security may block right-wing Israeli protesters from entering Jericho. The deciding game of the NBA Finals will be played tonight between the Houston Rockets and New York Knicks in Houston. The city is trying to avert any post-game violence by putting more police officers on the streets. Mark Moran reports from Houston.
Houston police won't say how many officers will be working tonight. Spokespeople will only say that there will be enough to handle any problem that might arise should violence erupt in the streets, the way it did after hockey's New York Rangers won the Stanley Cup in a seventh and decisive game last week. Police say they don't expect violence in the streets of Houston, but the city has never had a team on the brink of a championship in any professional sport. Tonight's seventh game will decide basketball's champion, and whether the Rockets win or lose, the city has planned a parade Friday. Houston Mayor Bob Lanier, not the same one who starred in the NBA, has offered to shred the city budget to use as confetti should the home team win. For National Public Radio, this is Mark Moran in Houston.
The Japanese government acknowledged today for the first time that Japan forced Chinese prisoners into slave labor during World War II. The foreign ministry says it has finished investigating documents that came to light last year showing nearly 39,000 Chinese were forced to work in Japanese mines and factories. The papers say thousands of prisoners were victims of malnutrition and torture, and the death rate at some sites was as high as 50%. I'm Barbara Campbell, NPR News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Dave Alvin. We asked him to stay for the second part of our show to play more of his old and new songs. Dave Alvin started off in the band The Blasters, co-founded with his brother Phil, then briefly played guitar in the band X. He's been on his own since 1986. He's just released his fourth solo album called The King of California. In the first part of the show, he talked about the influence of the blues on his playing and songwriting. I asked him if he ever went through a period of feeling uncomfortable about being a white person playing the blues.
I don't really have a problem with it because I'm not trying to do cotton field songs. I'm not trying to do I was born in Chicago kind of songs. The one thing I learned early on from following the blues guys around was that I had to write my own blues. And it's probably the reason why it took me so long to write songs was I hadn't lived enough yet to start writing songs. I mean, Mose Allison is a great blues singer, great blues songwriter. You know, Bob Dylan's a great blues singer and a great blues songwriter. Hank Williams was a great blues singer, great, you know, blues songwriter. And so I don't think it's white people can't, but I think you have to have a certain understanding of where the music's coming from. A lot of, say, the white performers try to take it out of its political social context and strip it of that meaning. And that meaning's very important in the blues, you know, especially in the black blues. And it sanitizes it and makes it, you know, it makes it like the beer commercial music, you know, that you hear on, you know, for cars or beer commercials on TV. And to me, that's really sad because that strips a lot of the dignity and a lot of the ambiguity and a lot of the majesty and a lot of the terror and a lot of the sadness and a lot of the, God, character out of the blues and out of R&B. And it just kind of breaks my heart at times because I think about little kids. When I was a little kid and I would hear Howlin' Wolf for the first time, I heard him on the border radio stations coming across from Mexico. And it was at night and it was scary and it was wonderful and it was liberating. And I wanted to know more about it. And I think when, you know, a kid, say, 8 years old today, hears blues or R&B for the first time, or even country music, he's hearing it on commercials. And I wish there was a law. I think we should make an amendment to the Constitution that all commercials had to sound like they did in the 50s. It'd be little jingles that were just corny.
Yeah,
you know,
I know,
and that
exactly
way it would be this whole other genre, and we could keep everything else pure. You know, I mean, people say that about, you know, Beatles songs being used for Nike ads or something, but...
You feel that way about the Muddy Waters ads?
I feel that way about, yeah. I think it's great for the musicians, you know, and to be, not to be a hypocrite. I've done a couple sessions where I've done that because it helps pay the rent. But it is the catch-22 of, you know, it's, you know, musicians have to survive. They have to eat. They have to do this, you know, for a living. But on the other hand, you know, these days especially, it's just like we want to strip everything of its meaning.
It sounds like there was maybe a period of limbo for you when you were learning blues styles of other people, but you hadn't yet found a way to make those styles your own, to use that style in your own kind of songwriting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you ask certain, like, blues purists, does Dave Alvin play blues, I'll say no. Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, the same thing if you ask a country purist, does he play country? No. He's a rock and roll guy, you know, whatever. But to me, a song like, say, Long White Cadillac, which was a hit for Dwight Yoakam, I was basically writing kind of a secular song for the Swan Silvertones, was what I was saying, like a blues song for a gospel group to sing. Don't ask me how that works, but... But I was trying to put it into things that I felt and things that I had seen. And because of that, I don't want to feel restricted into writing any set blues, you know. You know, first line repeated twice and answered on the third kind of pattern. Because to me, the blues is so integrated into American music. I mean, it's the bedrock. It's everywhere. It's from country to jazz to rock and roll to, you know, whatever. That if I play a country song, it's a blues song. Mm-hmm. You know, is the way I view it.
So as long
I think I think Ray Charles has the same attitude. You know, so.
So was Long White Cadillac an important song in you creating a style for yourself?
I think Border Radio was maybe the most. That was the first one where I said, okay, here's something that is only in a certain area in the Southwest. You know, do people really know about it? And it was written about a woman that I kind of knew. And when I wrote that, I was like, hey, I think we might be on the right track here. Because the few songs I wrote before it, you know, not that they were bad, because you know, but they were just, I was feeling myself, you know, in the dark, kind of like trying to figure out how to view my world from you know, one, that's all the American music tradition, and also from the southeast side of Los Angeles.
You've re-recorded Border Radio on your new album, and the new album's called King of California. Would you do a few lines of that for us?
Sure. So one more midnight and her man is still gone. The night moves too slow and she tries to remember the heat of his touch while listening to the border radio. And this song comes from 1962, dedicated to a man who's gone. 50,000 watts out of Mexico. This is the border radio. This is the border radio. So that's even though it's not to me that's a blues song.
Yeah, it's a great song. Dave Alvin is my guest. We're going to take a short break, then we'll be back. This is Fresh Air. Featuring a concert and interview with songwriter, guitarist, and singer Dave Alvin. There's a song of yours called Bus Station.
Yeah.
That I'd really like you to do, and this is one of the songs on the new album. And could you talk about this song? Seeing what elements it brings together of what we've been talking about, the different styles of guitar playing and your approach to singing and songwriting.
Well, the guitar playing's pretty rudimentary.
Mm-hmm.
The style of singing is pretty direct, I would say. You know, I'm not. It's not like it's a showstopper number. You know, you're not. Liza Minnelli's not going to cut this one. But
don't give up hope.
Yeah. But the lyrics. This was. If Border Radio was the song that kind of told me that I was on the right track, this was the song that told me I could write songs. Everything else. Yeah, like I said, it'd been kind of flukish, you know. I didn't know how to go and access it, you know. It would have to hit. And we were working on the second Blaster record, and I took 2.5 months off from everything. The only bad habit I kept was cigarette smoking. I didn't drink, didn't go out at night, and I sat in a room scared trying to write songs. And when I finished this one, I was like, I can write a song. I can do it. Because this one was sculpted, and it came from a real life experience, and it was sculpting it down to just the right words and the right everything to fit the mood. And once I did it, then I was like, I kind of walked out of the room and just felt like I'm a songwriter now, you know, even though I'd already had the international hit by someone else and all that. I walked out with with maybe one of my more uncommercial songs I've ever written, but it's just, that's why it's on the record. It's my song. Bus station at sunup, looking for a new place to go. He sips his coke and he pulls his ring and thinks of how she looked years ago. And she curls up in a blanket in a yellow plastic seat. Stares out the window at an empty morning street. Well, he must have had a screw loose in his head, end up like this after all he said. He lies to her, she kisses him, getting tired of love. At sunup, she reads the ticket in her hand. It's a different name for the same old town. This ain't the life that they had planned. So he tries to tell her it won't be like the times before. Different town and a brand new start, and he's gonna work a little bit more. Well, he must have had a screw loose in his head to end up like this after all he said. He lies to her, she kisses him, getting tired of love. Station and sunup, there's another hour left to blow. He touches her and she'd like to leave, but there's no place left to go. She must have had a screw loose in her head. How could she believe everything he said? Lies to her, she kisses him, getting tired of love, getting tired of love, getting tired of love.
That is a great song. And that's the kind of song I can imagine. I won't name names, but I can imagine a lot of people singing that song, including country singers.
Well, you know, maybe in the 70s, because there was kind of a strain there for a while with Billy Joe Shavers and Waylon and people like that that were writing pretty real songs. And a lot of the stuff today is more kind of positive.
I know exactly what you mean. And songs like about how great country music is.
Yeah. Yeah. And this would, like I said, it's not a showstopper. And everything these days is a showstopper.
It's a great song.
Thanks.
How come you didn't call it Tired of Love or Getting Tired of Love?
Oh, because it's a song about a bus station. No, okay. It's just a better title, you know. I mean, Tired of Love is kind of...
Makes it more corny?
Well, you know... Bus station is more intriguing. Like, gee, what could this possibly be about? Uh-huh. Tired of Love. Oh, he's got a song about being tired of love.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just, yeah, it's just more of a, it's a picture of a bus station, you know, as well as their relationship, you know. It's like the bus station is like this waiting area, you know, and they're kind of in that waiting area of life, Oh, boy, that's corny. That was corny. Stick to songs. But you know what I mean, though. You know.
My guest is Dave Alvin. He has a new album called King of California. More music in a minute. This is Fresh Air. The UN Security Council voted to allow French troops to enter Rwanda. Noah Adams is with us. Noah, what will you have on All Things Considered?
We'll have a report from the UN, and also I'll speak with the BBC correspondent in Kigali. There's evidence the rebel forces there are trying to capture the rest of the capital city before the French troops arrive. The rebels, the RPF, say they'll fight the French, believing they're coming in to help support the government. Also, I'll talk with David Kessler, the head of the Food and Drug Administration, about the agency's request to Congress concerning the possible regulation of nicotine. And I'll speak with Tom O'Neill, a playwright, about his new production in New York, looking back on the Stonewall riots by gays in Greenwich Village. The play is about the death of Judy Garland.
Thanks, Noah. That and more on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. My guest is songwriter, guitarist, and singer Dave Alvin. Often when we do concerts on Fresh Air, I like to ask the songwriter to do a song that they didn't write, but that they really love, but would seem out of character for them to love. A song that we'd be surprised that you love.
Oh, boy.
So surprise us.
Okay, let me tune. Let's see. With my voice, if I sing anything, it's kind of... kind of a surprise if I sing anybody else's songs, but I'll play a song that I love. It's a Curtis Mayfield, Jerry Butler song, and I guess maybe that's not too shocking, I guess. But maybe this one would be, I don't know.
He don't love you like I love you. If he did, he wouldn't break your heart. And he don't love you like I love you. And he's trying to tear us apart. Fare thee well, I know you're leaving with that new love that you found, that handsome guy you've been dating. I got the feeling he's gonna put you down. He don't love you like I love you. If he did, he wouldn't break your heart. He don't love you like I love you. He's trying to tear us apart. He uses all the great quotations. He says the words I wish I could say. But he's had so many rehearsals. Baby, to him it's just another play. But wait. When the final act is over and you're left standing all alone, when he takes his bow and makes his exit, well, baby, I'll be there to take you home. Cause he don't love you like I love you. If he did, he wouldn't break your heart. He don't love you like I love you. He's trying to tear us apart. Of surprise that is, but we could do another one.
Well, that sounded great. I mean, it's a soul song done in a different kind of way. Dave Alvin, this has really been wonderful.
Well,
I thank
you
so much for being here and for playing some of your songs for us. It's been great.
Thanks for having me.
Dave Alvin's new album is called King of California. This is a duet from the album with Rosie Flores. Fresh Air's interviews and reviews are produced by Amy Sallet, Joan Tuohy, Naomi Person, and Phyllis Myers, with Nancy Greenlease and Jewel Bracey. Research assistance from Louisa Shafia. I'm Terry Gross.
It's just like an angel, that's what you mean. Oh, but we've had some troubles, and I've been thinking of you.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Africa, between Iraq and the World Bank. We talk with New York Times reporter John Darton about his three-part series on Africa. He says the World Bank is the new superpower in post-Cold War Africa, the era of the president for life is over, and ethnic fighting could get worse. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.